22. Caro had never seen Julian so agitated. This was a different Julian, from the urbane mastermind who juggled people like wooden pins. As they left Watkins's room, she caught at his arm and said, "What do you want me to tell Trevor and the medical staff?" He stopped walking. "Christ, I haven't thought." "Call them together and tell them about the theft. Just the minimum details. No, wait, you need to tell Trevor all of it. He's seen your staff too. Caution them. This is important, Caro. That they can't talk or email or text any of this outside the compound or discuss it with any of James's people. And don't tell them that we think Ben might have poisoned Aiden with Rosary P. In fact, don't tell them Aiden was poisoned. Just that he's going to be all right. And we'll be coming back to the compound in a few days. I guess you better talk to Trevor first, then the others. I have to get my team together to start checking code. We'll use the big conference room in Wing 3, and we may need the security office rooms too.
Then I'll use the hospital, Caro said. In the hospital break room, she comforted a tearful Rosita.
I thought Ben was just in the bathroom. The light was on in there, and he'd said he was having constipation.
And then sent her to summon the entire rest of the medical staff for a 7:30 meeting. Trevor entered the lounge, tucking his shirt into his pants as she was making coffee.
Caro, what's wrong? What's happened?
Close the door, Trevor. The entire medical staff is going to be arriving soon, but Julian wanted me to tell you more than I'll tell them. They sat at the round table in the middle of the room and, to the incongruously cheerful sound and smell of brewing coffee, Caro related the night's disaster. Trevor didn't interrupt, his brown eyes fastened intently on her face. Caro finished with, "Nobody seems to know exactly what Ben will do with the data, since doing anything with it will take millions of dollars." Trevor said,
"I can think of a few things."
Abruptly, he rose, walked to the coffee machine, didn't touch it, walked back to the table and sat down again. He ran his hand through his thinning hair.
Julian's gesture, handicapped by having only 10% of Julian's mane.
His face was rigid, except for his eyes, which shone with a controlled fury that startled Caro.
He said, "To take this incredible breakthrough, this thing of wonder and awe and transcendence, proof of the kind of transcendence that humanity has hungered for since prehistory, to use that for—"
He broke off. "For what, Trevor? What do you think Ben can do with it?" Trevor rose again and went back to the coffee, this time pouring two cups. He handed her one.
"I don't know for sure. How could I?
But George's theory and Julian's software and hardware allow a person to create and enter a new branch of the universe just as real as this one, do anything they wish there, and then leave it to continue on without its creator. In Africa, I saw what that kind of unfettered power can do to a helpless village. An alternate universe in the wrong hands?"
Caro said carefully, "I can't judge George's theory because I don't have the math. But I've seen no evidence that what happens during post-surgery sessions hooked to the computer is anything more than an engineered hallucination. And," she felt compelled to add this, although she didn't know why, "both Julian and Watkins know that's where I stand."
"Well," he said, surprising her yet again, "I'm not sure I believe George's entire theory either. I won't be sure until you implant me. I'm keeping an open mind." "No, I'm not implying that you aren't, Caro. I really hope you're not a poker player. Your face might as well have your thoughts scrolling across your forehead like a Times Square billboard."
Stung, she retorted, "Nobody else seems able to read me so easily."
"No," he said, sipping his coffee and making a face. "Then only me."
Before she could think of anything at all to say to that, Rosita opened the door.
"Doctor, everybody's here."
Caro nodded and rose. Her medical staff, including Barbara and Molly, in various states of hasty dress, crowded around the nursing station. Caro told them about Ben Clarby's theft and Julian's insistence on a quarantine of all information to outsiders. She finished with all the good news she could summon up. Julian's staff was working to check and secure all data. Ben was being searched for. Aiden was recovering well and would return to the compound, maybe tomorrow. The surgical schedule would continue as planned, with Ivan Kyvan next. "The project is going forward," she said reassuringly, "no matter what. Does anyone have questions?" No one did, because either they were too stunned or she'd been so thorough. After they left, however, Barbara asked Caro, "Did Clarby steal the mapping data too? And the work we've done on it?" She hadn't thought of that. All her and Barbara's work, their future spectacular publication. She felt suddenly sick. "I don't know. I'll ask Julian." She did. Ben had not stolen any patient imaging, brain mapping data, neural research files, personnel information. Nothing but the knowledge to program chips and computers in order to create what? When Caro and Trevor left the scrub room after Ivan Kyvan's surgery, Barbara waited for Caro in the corridor. "How did the operation go?"
"Smooth as cream."
Ivan, master of the inappropriate comment, had the most beautiful brain Caro had ever seen. Opening up some brains, usually but not always on older patients, revealed problems not picked up by dye in MRI images. Slow-growing, low-grade astrocytomas, incipient aneurysms, small knotted snarls of blood vessels. Not Ivan. His brain had been as innocent of anomalies as his personality was of social skills. The chip insertion had gone flawlessly.
"Beautiful work, doctor," Trevor said.
He'd watched her every step, and Caro had surprised herself by not being nervous while being studied by this much more experienced surgeon. In the OR, at least, she was still sure of herself. Barbara said, "Caro, Watkins wants to see us later this afternoon. He wants a report on the mapping data." "Did you send him our files?"
"Yes. I think he's going over them now so he can ask us questions later. Although, who knows? Maybe he'll say we knocked down Dr. Weigert's entire theory."
"Did we?" Barbara smiled. "No, we put floor beams under it. But Watkins's summons isn't the only reason I've been stalking you. Lorraine arrived on the island this morning for her second multiverse session, and Julian sent me to bring both of you to Wing 3 right now." Trevor said,
"I thought her session was tomorrow."
"Was supposed to be, but she's here now." Caro said, "Can I at least get a cup of coffee first?"
"You drink too much of that stuff," Barbara said.
"I'm a surgeon. Of course I drink too much coffee. Without caffeine, nobody would ever receive any surgery at all. Didn't you go to med school?"
"It seems a million years ago," Barbara said. "I was a different person. Speaking of which, wait until you see Lorraine. Trevor, you haven't met her before, so you won't have any comparison, but Caro will."
When they reached the session room, Caro clutching a double espresso, she looked at Lorraine and blinked. She almost didn't recognize Julian's sister. Gone were the dangly earrings, heavy eyeshadow, low-cut tops. Lorraine wore jeans and a loose crewneck sweater that, after a moment, Caro recognized as one of Julian's. Her walk had lost its sexy bounce. Lorraine glided forward, her face serene. "Hello, Caro," she said.
"Hi. Good to see you again. If it's really you I'm seeing."
Weigert nodded at Caro and Barbara. Julian said,
"We're about ready to start."
In contrast to his sister, Julian looked terrible. Since Ben Clarby's theft and disappearance, he seemed to have aged a decade. The skin beneath his eyes sagged,
His face looked pasty and hollow-cheeked, as if he hadn't slept. Meticulous checking showed that the compound's data had not been compromised by Ben Clarby's theft, but neither electronic nor physical searching had found any trace of Ben. Most likely there had been a boat waiting for Ben on one of the reef beaches. Julian blamed himself for the entire debacle. Weigert said to Lorraine,
"Just lie down on the cot, Ms. Day, and let your brother connect you."
"Okay." Lorraine smiled, so compliant and non-snarky, so un-Lorraine-like, that sudden unease washed through Caro. As Lorraine glided toward the machinery, Caro put one hand on Julian's arm and whispered, "Lorraine isn't. Do you see a personality change in her?"
"Yes, but not from your surgery, Caro. From her multiverse experience."
"How does—"
"I only know what she told me."
Barbara and Julian took their places by the computers. Caro, having no choice, waited with Trevor and Weigert.
Annoyed to find her heart thumping.
Why?
She drank off the rest of her coffee, which did not help. The program switched on, and Lorraine switched off, her face going blank in the way that was, and was not, like patients in a vegetative state. Not there. Elsewhere. But with a subtle difference from any vegetative or coma patients that Caro had ever seen. A difference she could not name. The screen brightened. Lorraine's image, alone in the room, rose from the bed and walked out the door. But not into the courtyard programmed into the chip. Darkness lay beyond the door. A peculiar darkness, suffused with flashes of golden light. Lorraine walked into it and vanished. Weigert gasped.
"The program!"
"It's not the program,"
Julian said. And then,
"I think that's what she's creating."
Nothing? Lorraine was creating nothing? Caro's hand wobbled, and droplets of coffee splashed onto the floor. What if Caro's surgery had affected Lorraine's brain in some way not obvious until electrodes connected her to the computer's power sources? What if Caro had unwittingly destroyed some critical neural connections that—
"Stop the program, Julian," Weigert said. "Now!"
He did. The screens went dark. Lorraine stirred, sat up on the bed, and blinked once. Julian spoke gently to his sister. Caro saw that the gentleness was costing him every last fiber of willpower.
"Where were you, Lorraine?"
she said. "Everywhere. Every time." Normal speech? Caro's relief was so great that she sank, boneless, against the wall. Barbara said,
"Everywhere? You were gone less than a minute."
"No," Lorraine said. "I was gone for all time, and no time. And now I don't ever need to do that again. It's with me for good now. Caro, you can remove my chip if you like. Use it for somebody else." Julian said,
"What's with you for good?"
"The oneness," Lorraine said. "It's all one. I'm you, and you're me, and we're everything. And once you know that, you can't not know it. I'm sorry, I can't explain it any better than that. There aren't words." She swung her long legs off the bed and stood up. "You have to experience it. Everyone should. Then, you know."
Weigert said, "You agreed to more sessions, Ms. Day, for after the input is reprogrammed."
"Okay, if you want me to. I just meant that I don't need to do it again for myself. Fuck, I wish I could give you all what I now have." Those words sounded more like Lorraine. The tears in her eyes did not, nor her obvious pity for everyone else in the room, which Caro resented. She didn't need pity.
"I have to go now," Lorraine said. "There are people at home that I need to apologize to. I haven't always been a kind person."
Barbara blurted, "Are you kind now?"
Probably not, Lorraine said. But they're me, you see, and I'm them. I didn't know that before. I didn't know how I'd hurt them. I have to make some phone calls.
She walked, no, glided out of the room, leaving them all standing there. Julian, Barbara finally said, I think I'd like some of that scotch you're always waving at everyone.